Well, I'm happy to see so many visitors. Can't wait to talk to you afterwards to find out if you were actually brought in because there is this biblical topic, as opposed to the regulars who stayed home because there was this biblical topic of faith, hope, and charity. You know, it has this kind of religious ring to it that makes people uncomfortable. I had an epiphany a week ago that I shared during the workshop that I conducted with the rabbi here last Tuesday. And my epiphany was about a pattern in my life and how I am in the world. And I really hadn't thought about it until it went and hit me upside the head, as epiphanies tend to do. And I realized that my first hobby was mythology, that I was really interested in Greek mythology and then in Roman mythology and how the gods changed from Greek to Roman, and then to compare them with Norse mythology and to look at the interrelationships. And then I began to look at Middle Eastern and to see where the various gods and stories came from, what was different, what was the same, what were the strings that connected them and the excuses that we found to separate them and to make differences that were not intrinsically important seem life and death important. I also was looking to build bridges in other ways. I grew up on a street where we had, I know this sounds like the start of a joke, it's no, not a rabbi, a minister, and a priest, but we had three psychoanalysts, all of whom were from different schools. And if you think that Sunni and Shia and Kurds don't get along, try a Freudian, a Jungian, and an Adlerian, and it was all hell breaking loose in the neighborhood. True story. I was about 12 years old, and I was leaving the house, and I kissed my father goodbye. And the psychoanalyst down the street said, "Is this very healthy to be kissing your son in the labile times of his teenage..." Oh, boy. And it was... anyway, I looked at all those people and all those differences that they found to be important and understood that they had more in common than they had that kept them apart. But the difference in the numbers of the angels that they thought could dance on the heads of pins kept them apart. It's also clear to me, as I am a professor of comparative religion, that I'm interested in comparative religion and how people choose or inherit the systems that give a sense of community, a sense of meaning and of purpose, how we grow love within our own world, and then choose to hand it out into a larger world or to build walls and to put our hands up and say, "I'm so sorry, we've got the loving God and he's going to burn you." And I've always looked for the commonality. I accept the differences and am enriched by the differences. How dull it would be if there were but one religion, one understanding, one interpretation. But I want to build bridges. And that's not always good. I'm not kind of blowing my own horn here. I remember overhearing somebody complaining about me at my previous congregation bitterly, that they couldn't get me into a fight, that whatever happened in the talk back, I would find a way of agreeing. And that he just found that very difficult. And I walked up to him and I said, "You know, I agree. It's a problem." And he said, "See?" And I said, "Yeah, I'm on your side here. I don't see it. I don't understand the problem, but I do. We don't want to deny differences, but we don't need to be threatened by them. We can build bridges across them." And I was thinking about this when I selected the sermon topic today of faith, hope, and charity. It is, in a sense, the Holy Trinity, morally, the true watchwords of Christianity. And they're the true watchwords, in my view, of every religion. Faith. Our religions are about faith. Hope. How can we not hope for and want a better tomorrow? And charity. How will we ever make tomorrow better if we don't give today from our hearts back out to the world. These seem to me to be, in one way or another, or actually in many ways, at the heart of almost every religious practice. Not necessarily belief, but practice. Now, one of the reasons that I love academics and I actually read the Bible in various translations and whenever possible in original tongues is the words are so interesting. And if you want to be a fundamentalist, you've got such a big problem because the words don't necessarily mean what you think that the words mean. So faith, hope, and charity, it's a terrific idea. But what did I just talk about? How do we understand the word faith in various traditions? We look at the word faith in English, and I'm not just doing academic etymology. These differences and these origins open up the concept and I think take us away from narrowness to a more open-minded and open-hearted understanding of what we share in common by our different uses and understandings of the word. So we look at faith. Well, what is faith? Well, it's belief in things unseen is one of the normal English definitions. It's really unsatisfying because then I have faith in ghosts and I have faith in all kinds of things that I don't see that I may believe. Well, faith is acting as if you believed something. You know, I want you to take it on faith, which means believe me and don't think for yourself. That's not how I understand the word faith. And strangely enough, it's not how the word faith was understood in either the Latin from which it was translated or the Greek. In Latin, faith is fides. It is fidelity. It is loyalty. And that's why dogs are called Fido. Hello? It's because of the idea of fidelity and of loyalty. It is loyalty to self, to life, to love, to relationships. It is a sense of loyalty to who we are at our deepest and to our values. It is fidelity. In Greek, the word is completely different. In Greek, the word for faith is pistos, and it means knowledge. It doesn't mean belief. It doesn't mean opinion. Taking it on faith doesn't mean acting as if. It means acting because you had the experience. Now, I know this is an uncomfortable example, but it's a good one, and that is when a fundamentalist Christian talks about being born again, it's not about an opinion. It's about an experience. I can't say whether the experience was genuine or not because I didn't have it, but it's experiential. It's not about faith in our Western sense of acting as if they had a transformative experience. I have to believe they had a transformative experience. Something happened, and it isn't opinion, it's knowledge. This, just so that things don't get too boring, let me talk about sex. This is why in the Bible we talk about, and Adam knew his wife. And we talk about somebody knowing someone biblically, that's the big code word for intercourse. No, it's not the code word for intercourse. It's the code word for intimacy. Big difference. When you look at the rest of the Bible, whether in Latin, Greek, or Hebrew, there are a whole bunch of different words that they use for sex. But to know someone implies intimacy, not simply physicality. And so this idea of faith being fidelity and knowledge expands it greatly for me. How about hope? Hope we sometimes deal with as if it were just a wish. Oh, you know, I hope it doesn't rain. I hope my candidate wins. I hope both of those things, by the way. But I'm not going to name the candidate, although the word hope... Anyway, Hope can be something quite empty and weak and passive. Oh, I just hope things turn out okay. In the Latin, the word is related to espere, and it's related to waiting. It's kind of waiting for something to happen, but not simply passively waiting. It's elpis in Greek. But it's not simply passively waiting. It's doing something. It's making a plan. It's taking that faith, that knowledge of what the nature of life and reality is, that is faith, and it is moving to the next step towards a plan. How are we going to make that world about which we dream happen? If it's simply passive waiting, well, God's going to take care of it. God's going to cut. You don't need to save water. You don't need to worry about global warming. God's going to come and fix it all. So just go out and enjoy yourself and hope everything works out. Hope is often used as a cop-out, but its essential meaning is not passive. Its essential meaning is in formulating a plan that leads to something. I did the English, the Latin, the Greek. The Hebrew for faith is enuma, and the Hebrew for hope is the name of the Jewish congregation here. It's tikvah. And the national anthem for Israel is HaTikvah, the hope. And it's not hope that is, okay, God's going to take care of everything. It's, well, what are we going to do now? What are we going to do when we are in bondage in Israel? I'm sorry, in Egypt. What are we going to do when we're in bondage in England? What are the slaves going to do when they were in bondage in America? That hope wasn't something passive. It was something active. Now, the line faith, hope, and charity comes clearly for all who have read the book from 1 Corinthians 13, the Pauline material. And it says, what abideth is hope, faith, and charity. And charity is the greatest of these. This is what's really important. When we think about charity, we think about, oh, let's give to a good cause. NPR, the Red Cross, the church, a political, let's give to a good cause because that's a good thing to do. There are poor people out there and it'll make me feel better. The word charity in Latin is caritas, and it's from the heart. It isn't simply to the poor. It is from the heart. A connection is made. If you're just writing the check and throwing it out there, it's better than nothing. But the full meaning of charity from the Latin is from the heart to another. It's made very clear when you look at the word for charity that was actually used in the Pauline letters in Greek. It's agape. It's unconditional love. It is that connection of seeing yourself in the eyes, in the needs of the other person. It isn't writing a check out there to someone. It is making a heart-soul connection with others and with the world. From charity, which is just a nice thing, to caritas, which is a heartfelt thing, to agape, which is an inclusive thing. These are hugely important clues about the very nature of religiosity. The very heart of religiosity is not in our mythology. It isn't in the gods that we imagine or the gods that we deny. It's not in the miraculous acts that we either say are completely ridiculous or we believe in, or we come up with naturalistic explanations. Well, they walked on the rocks and there was a big tidal wave and the sea split. That's not what it's about. All of the stories are ways to remind us of what it is that we need to do in the world. And I think Paul got it exactly right. The hierarchy, and all three are necessary, is faith. All of us have some belief, some knowledge, some sense of how the world is, of how we are connected to it, about our lives having some sense of meaning that is either intrinsic or that we discover or that we create by what we do. All of us should have some sense of the great audacity of hope. When we sang that song, that hymn, that spiritual, talking about, and it came from a black spiritual, about where we are bound, look at the words to that. How could somebody have sung that song in the 19th century? How could somebody have sung that song in the early 20th century and believed, had the audacity to hope that we would ever be where we are today? Far from the promised land, but we have come so very far, and we did not come this far towards justice, towards a better world, towards not achieving, but towards equality, by simply hoping. Faith that we could make a difference informed a heart that said yes and made a plan, that marched in Selma, that picketed in Torrance, that fought for fair housing. There were actions that were taken. Faith is the energy. Hope is the plan. And charity, caritas, in the Hebrew tikva, I'm sorry, in the Hebrew tzedakah, and in the Arabic tzedakah, it's a really interesting word. That's the action step. And you know, the action step, when you look at the words, tzedakah in the Arabic, zakat in another form, which is righteousness of giving, that sense of connection that you, when you give to somebody, but the root of the word in both Hebrew and Arabic is tzedek, which is justice. And notice that in the Hebrew scriptures, it doesn't say believe in justice, it says do justice, love mercy, and walk humbly. Paul says faith, hope, and charity, caritas, agape, justice. Do justice. Give from the heart. We need all three elements. We need the spiritual element of the knowledge that we have. We need the planning elements of the hope that we have that informs us of where we want to go. And then we need to do justice. We need to do that charity from ourselves out to the world, to complete that circuit and to make us powerful, because when we do justice, then it circles back and informs our knowledge of the world, and it boosts our sense of hope, and it becomes a positive feedback loop that makes us better in every sense and stronger morally and ethically and more effective in the world in making our dreams, our hopes, our faith, concrete reality through our hopes being made real by our actions.